This Is Your Life, episode 19.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be?
Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we'll be talking about what the internet is doing to our brains. I'm going to be summarizing and then responding to an article in the July 2012 issue of Newsweek called "Tweets, Texts, Email, and Posts is the Onslaught Making Us Crazy?" But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE, Launch, and Platform conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. These conferences provide the tools you need to take your speaking to the next level. Well, the next SCORE conference is scheduled for October 17 through 20 in Vail, Colorado at the beautiful Park Hyatt at Beaver Creek. We had the conference at this same location last year, and it was amazing. It was an incredible conference in a gorgeous setting at a beautiful time of year. I'll be there the whole week along with my partner, Ken Davis. And in addition to the formal instruction and the small group coaching, Ken and I'll just be hanging out. We'll be meeting with you, with your fellow attendees, just, you know, to share ideas, to get to know one another. We've had some amazing discussions at the evening receptions in the past over breakfast, lunch, and dinner as well. But the reason I'm bringing this up now is that because the early bird registration pricing ends on Tuesday, July the 31st. And if you register anytime before then, we'll give you a $200 discount off the regular price. Now, here's all you got to do. You need to go to scoreconference.com, and that's SCORE with two R's, and enter the coupon code Hyatt. That'll give you a $200 discount off the regular price. Now, this conference is going to sell out. I guarantee you it has the last two times. So if you want to attend, if you've thought about attending, you need to take action now. And by the way, you take zero risk. If you attend the conference and you don't feel like this investment was worth every penny you paid, we'll happily refund your full registration fee, no questions asked. So let's talk about the impact of the internet on our brains. As you probably know, if you follow my podcast or blog, my wife Gail and I spent 2 weeks earlier this month on vacation, and we went to Monteagle, Tennessee, which is a little over an hour from our home here in Nashville. But Monteagle is located in the mountains, and I use that term loosely for my friends in Colorado who know what real mountains are. But it's located in the mountains of the Cumberland Plateau, beautiful area. We rented a small home on Clifftops Lake there in an absolutely gorgeous setting. And we decided that while we were there, we would be completely offline. No email, no Twitter, no Facebook, nada, completely unplugged. Interestingly, on the first day of our vacation, we went shopping. And as I was standing in the checkout line, I happened to see the new issue of Newsweek magazine. The cover said, "I crazy, panic, depression, psychosis, how connection addiction is rewiring our brains." Well, that totally captivated me, and I decided to buy the issue and go home and read it. And by the way, I've linked in the show notes to the online version of the article, which has a slightly different title, but it's the same one, and you'll definitely want to read this as when you finish with listening to this episode. But frankly, I found the article really disturbing. In fact, I was ready to go Amish after reading it. But after sitting on it now for a few weeks, I think I have a little more balanced response. Thank God. But what I want to do is give you kind of the high points of the article. And then I want to offer some thoughts on how we can use the positive aspects of the internet without being abused by the negative ones. So let me just summarize the Newsweek article. It opens with the sad story of Jason Russell. I don't know if you remember him, but he was the creator of the viral video Kony 2012 about the African warlord Joseph Kony. And the video clocked more than 70 million views in the first week that it was out. But something happened to Russell, tragically, in the process. He suddenly became famous with all the accolades and the criticism that that entails. He slept, according to Newsweek, a total of 2 hours in the first 4 days, and he posted some bizarre tweets comparing his life to the movie Inception, where he was living a, quote, dream inside a dream. Well, on the eighth day, he took off his clothes and went to the corner of a busy intersection where he repeatedly slapped the concrete with both palms, and he ranted about the devil. And sadly, that too was videotaped and went viral. But afterwards, he was diagnosed with something they call reactive psychosis, which is a form of temporary insanity. And more troubling, doctors say this is an increasingly common experience when people experience a sudden transition from relative anonymity to worldwide fame. And of course, it's the internet that makes all of this possible today. Well, a few years ago, people were ridiculed for suggesting that the internet was having a negative impact on our minds. But now, according to the Newsweek article, the proof is starting to stack up. And this, I'm quoting from Newsweek now, quote, the first good peer-reviewed research is emerging, and the picture is much gloomier than the trumpet blasts of web utopians have allowed. The current incarnation of the internet, portable, social, accelerated, and all-pervasive, may be making us not just dumber or lonelier, but more depressed and anxious, prone to obsessive, compulsive, and attention deficit disorders, even outright psychotic. Our digitized minds can scan like those of drug addicts, and normal people are breaking down in sad and seemingly new ways, end quote. The problem is we're continuously connected. I mean, there's hardly a time when we're unplugged. Thanks to smartphones and other technologies, we've almost become cyborgs, those creatures that are half human and half machine. Here are some interesting facts from the article that I pulled out. On average, Americans stare at the same computer screen or some type of computer screen for 8 hours a day. Wow. When President Obama ran for office last time, another point, the iPhone had yet to be launched. Can you believe it? It hasn't been out that long. Now smartphones outnumber regular ones, and more than a third of users get online before they even get out of bed. The average person, regardless of age, sends or receives about 400 text messages a month, four times the 2007 number. But get this, the average teen processes an astounding 3,700 texts a month, double the 2007 figure. Again, quoting from the article, quote, altogether, the digital shifts of the last 5 years call to mind a horse that is sprinted out from underneath its rider, dragging the person who once held the reins underneath. No one is arguing for some kind of Amish future, but the research is now making it clear that the internet is not just another delivery system. It is creating a whole new mental environment, a digital state of nature where the human mind becomes a spinning instrument panel and few people will survive unscathed, end quote. Well, evidently, we now compulsively check our smartphones on average every 15 minutes. And when we can't do this, we become anxious, sullen, and depressed. We don't even know why. But the pings, whether they're email or social media, give us kind of a mini reward, the article calls it, a squirt of dopamine with effects similar to the addictive behaviors of drugs, gambling, and porn. Perhaps the most scary revelation is what is happening to our brains. New brain scan technology shows that our brains are being completely rewired. Heavy web users have fundamentally altered prefrontal cortexes. The brains of internet addicts, it turns out, look like the brains of drug and alcohol addicts. Even worse, Chinese researchers have shown that our gray matter, the part of the brain responsible for processing of speech, memory, motor control, emotion, sensory, and other information, is shrinking or atrophying. So if you think you're getting stupider or more dumb by using the internet, as it turns out, you might be. Well, don't kid yourself by thinking this only affects internet addicts. The article says, quote, the gap between an internet addict and John Q. Public is thin to non-existent. One of the early flags for addiction was spending more than 38 hours a week online. By that definition, get this, we're all addicts now, many of us by Wednesday afternoon, Tuesday, if it's a busy week, end quote. Well, numerous studies show that the more a person hangs out online, the worse they are likely to feel. Web use often displaces sleep, exercise, and face-to-face exchanges, all of which can lead to loneliness, a sense of isolation, and depression. So, like I said at the beginning of the episode, I found this article very disturbing, and I think you can see why. Gail and I had several long conversations about it while we were on our vacation and how we might respond. And as I've been thinking about it, I think there are really three possible responses. One is just withdrawal. You know, you go Amish, delete your social media accounts, swear off the internet, get unplugged, you know, move to a small town and completely bury your head in the sand. I don't think that's a very viable option. The other one is immersion. You know, you shrug your shoulders, give up, keep marching with the other lemmings right over the cliff. And I don't think that's acceptable either. I don't want to end up at a destination that I haven't chosen. The third option, and the one I'm going to recommend, is moderation. In other words, you just become more intentional about your internet usage, understanding that it's a double-edged sword, and you've got to be thoughtful in your use of it if you're going to survive unscathed or minimize the negative impact of it. So I don't think focusing on what you're not going to do works very well. I mean, you could create a whole bunch of rules on what you're not going to do and erect all these fences, and I think that probably aggravates the situation by making it somehow forbidden and alluring in that sense. But on my vacation, I read another very helpful book called Living Into Focus by Arthur Boers, and his last name is spelled B-O-E-R-S. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I've got a link in the show notes to the book. But it basically builds on the work of Albert Borgman, who is a scholar at the University of Montana, who has written extensively on the role of technology in our lives. And both of these men talk about cultivating specific, what they call focal practices, practices or activities that you intentionally focus on that require your full attention. And I've written on similar practices under the rubric of disciplines of the heart. I did a blog post a while back that was very popular with that same title. But regardless, we're all plowing the same field. And my premise for this podcast is you can enjoy the benefits of the internet while avoiding many of the dangers by embracing five positive disciplines. So this isn't so much about swearing off the internet or erecting boundaries as much as it is of cultivating these five positive disciplines. So let me give these to you. Number one, the discipline of rest. You know, the root word of the word vacation is vacate, to leave. And there's a lot of ways to do this, but this is why we need vacations. We need time to rest. We need time to retreat from the surge of our ordinary day-to-day grind. Well, how? Well, I think, first of all, going away. If you possibly can, don't make it a staycation. Make it a change of scenery and completely unplug. I don't know about you. I rarely do that, but every time I have done it, it's been an invaluable experience. And then just getting completely quiet. You know, we live in such a busy world where the noise is constant. You know, it's blaring in our ears. If it's not the radio, it's the TV. And if it's not the TV, it's the internet. We've got this constant stream of input that I think over time becomes disorienting. And it affects our values. It affects how we view the world. It has a lot of negative impact, makes us kind of anxious about the world. So I think getting quiet is hugely helpful. Another book I read while I was on vacation was Martha Beck's book, The Joy Diet. And I can't endorse everything in that book, but the first chapter was fantastic. In fact, all the chapters were excellent. Again, I don't endorse everything, but that first chapter is called Nothing. And it's kind of the first component of the Joy Diet. And the practice as she advocates is to sit alone for 15 minutes and do absolutely nothing. Get quiet. Try not to think about anything else. Don't fidget. You can observe your thoughts. You can watch them parade by, but just get quiet. Be still. And Gail and I practiced that while we were on vacation. We went down to the dock each day. We sat out there. We had a notebook on our lap, or in my case, I had a computer because I was journaling on a piece of software that I found called Day One, which I absolutely love. But to just sit there for a while before we began journaling, before we read, before we prayed, before we did anything else, to just sit for 15 minutes and kind of take it all in. It's the fundamental difference between doing and being. And to just take a few minutes to be. I mean, after all, we're human beings, not human doings. And being comes before doing. In fact, the doing in our lives, not to wax too philosophical, comes out of the being. And this is something that ought to be a daily practice. And it's amazing how this brings rest and restoration to our minds and our body. So to practice this discipline of rest on a daily basis by just doing nothing and getting quiet is hugely helpful. And then, of course, to try to also do this on a quarterly basis. And one of the things I also did on my vacation was to do my annual time block, which was to look ahead for the next 2 years, block out my vacations, my quarterly reviews, the things that were really important to me, times with my family, those kinds of things, and to put those on the calendar and make sure that I got time to do those. So quarterly reviews are a part of that. And then annually for us, and I totally realize that we're in a unique position in life because we have none of our kids are at home. They're all grown. They're gone. It's just the two of us. And we can take the time off, but we're going to take several weeks in the summer, usually the whole month of July, just to unplug. And we did that last year. We're doing it we did it this year, and we intend to do it next year. But just a time when we can kind of gather our thoughts, get unplugged from the world, reconnect with one another, and just kind of get our equilibrium back. So that's number one, the discipline of rest. Number two is the discipline of reflection. And I think this is a great counter to the constant input and reaction that we go through as we work on the internet or as we surf. You know, we're reacting, but we're rarely reflecting on what's going on. And so to practice the discipline of reflection might look like this, and this is how it looks in my life. It always begins in the morning with Bible reading. I want to orient my compass to true north. I want to get focused on the things that I know are true. And again, it might be different for you. I'm not trying to, you know, to push my faith down your throat. I'm just telling you that this is something I do, is to get reoriented on what matters most, to pray and then to journal. I find that hugely, hugely helpful. And I tell you, I'm a new convert to journaling. I tried at various points in my life to journal. Gail would encourage me from time to time, but I was never able to do it until this vacation. And today I just finished day 16 of journaling, and it's been easy. It's been fun. It's been extraordinarily rewarding for me to just write my thoughts or to type my thoughts into a journal. And again, I'm using a software package called Day One. I have no connection with the company. I don't know the people that started it, but it's a wonderfully simple program to use. And I found that the tool quickly gets out of my way and just leaves me staring at a blank screen where I can unpack my thoughts, where I can do a brain dump, so to speak, where I can kind of unpack my emotions and figure out what's going on in my mind. So hugely helpful, but that's just the discipline of reflection. We need that time where we're processing what we're experiencing. Life is going by so quickly and with increasing speed. So if we don't intentionally set aside time to reflect on what's happening, it's very likely that we're going to end up at a destination or a place that we didn't intend to go. And I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want that to happen for you. And that requires that you set aside time to reflect, hopefully again daily, just like the rest, but to set aside some time daily to reflect. Now that leads me to the third discipline, the discipline of reading. Now, when I originally wrote on this topic, I didn't include this particular discipline, but the more I've thought about it and the more I interacted with this article from Newsweek, the more I realize it's important. The kind of reading that you and I are doing on the web is not long-form reading. In fact, I think in some ways it leads to greater incidence of ADD or a lack of attention and distraction. But the kind of reading I'm talking about is the kind of reading where you're reading through a long-form piece like a book or a long essay, the kind of reading that settles your mind, builds and requires focus, and it stimulates your brain, particularly again if it's long-form reading, because we don't want the gray matter between our ears to atrophy. We don't want to somehow lose our cognitive depth and our precision in our thinking. And reading helps us, keeps that from happening. So I would encourage some kind of reading. I don't know about you, but I'm constantly reading. And I've said in other contexts that readers lead and leaders read. One leads to the other. I don't really know any leaders that are extraordinary leaders that aren't also habitual readers. So get in the habit, if you haven't been doing this, of reading. And if you have a hard time reading because you have a hard time sitting still, you know, see the first discipline. But another thing that I often do, and I do this for about 45 minutes a day, is when I go out for my daily run, I listen to a book, to an audio recording of a book on my iPhone. So it's a great way for me to consume a lot of content while I'm doing something else. But it does focus, or does require me to focus and to concentrate. And it does settle my mind, and it stimulates my thinking as I interact with that content. So the discipline of reading is the third discipline. The fourth discipline, and this is so important, the discipline of relationships. You know, this is the one thing that I think we get confused about on the web, because we have friends on Facebook, we have fans, we have followers, but those are different than real life relationships. Now, those can enhance those real life relationships, but they can never be a substitute for those real life relationships. We've got to be more intentional than that. And I would just encourage you to identify your four or five key friendships. We can't be friends with everybody. You know, we can't have 1,000 acquaintances and have any depth in these relationships. And the relationships will not be restorative, and they'll not be helpful to us if we've just got a bunch of shallow acquaintances, shallow friendships. What I'm talking about is identifying four or five key friendships, relationships that you want to invest in. And I'm talking about outside of your family. Obviously, you're going to want to invest in your family as well. But to actually seek these people out, make time for them on your calendar, and enter into real conversations. I'm not talking about just, you know, the who, what, why, when, and where of what they've been doing, but asking the why questions. You know, well, why do you think that happened? And to peel it back like an onion and ask that second question and go deeper in the conversation and explore one another's dreams and hurts and concerns and get to know one another, to know and to be known. The discipline of relationships. I think this is key. So many people that get in trouble on the internet have lost those relationships. There's nobody that's holding them accountable. There's no one that they're relating with on a human-to-human basis. And so the discipline of relationships will really protect us, I think, from that kind of loneliness and depression and loss of perspective that sometimes happens when we're just spending all of our time on the internet. And that leads us to the fifth discipline, the discipline of recreation. You know, there's just something about reconnecting with our creative self, our playful self, that renews our spirit. Just recently, when we came back from vacation, we had my oldest grandson, Finn, over for 24 hours, and he's 11 years old. And so I took him to the hobby shop here where they had these radio control airplanes and cars and boats and all that. And so we had a great time in the hobby shop just learning about these various radio controlled toys. And I discovered something about myself. This is a part of me that basically I put to sleep probably about, 40 years ago. And I haven't been involved in modeling since then. But when I walked in the doors of that hobby shop, I'll tell you what, something came alive. There was just a playfulness that I hadn't enjoyed or experienced in decades. And we had a blast. We ended up buying this micro helicopter, a little bitty helicopter, that actually flies. You can fly it indoors. It is a blast. We had so much fun. We played by the hour with that thing, trying to land it on various pieces of furniture in the house, trying to maneuver it around walls. And he was a lot better at it than I was. But we had a great time. And it was just a sense of playfulness and recreation that was key. And I know other people that paint. Some people go fishing. Some people golf. But the discipline of recreation gets you in touch with that creative part of you that is so important. It's so, frankly, godlike. God made us in his image, at least that's my belief. And part of that is that we're creative after the creator. And to get in touch with that and not just be a consumer, but to be a creator is an important aspect, I think, or an important defense against the kind of mindless consumeristic surfing that so often happens on the internet. So again, those five disciplines: the discipline of rest, the discipline of reflection, the discipline of reading, the discipline of relationships, and the discipline of recreation. I don't think we need to throw out the baby with the bathwater, but we do need to be intentional in our use of the internet. We need to build these five practices into our daily routine. It'll be a great inoculation against the negative impact of the internet. So with that, I want to turn to a few listener questions that I got in response to this topic. The first one comes from Aaron.
My name is Aaron McHugh, and I'm calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. My digital presence can be found at aaronmchugh.com. My question is this: Can you speak to the traps and pitfalls of social media related to seeking personal validation? I'd love to hear your thoughts on the importance of being grounded in your local community and personal relationships versus the obsessive necessity of seeking accolades and comments that occur within the social media community. Thank you.
Aaron, that's a very thoughtful and well-articulated question. And yes, I mean, that's essentially what I've been talking about. I think that when we're not well-grounded, when we're not a part of a community, when we don't have a healthy sense of ourself, I think we really are susceptible to that third party or outside validation. And of course, before the internet, that happened as well, because people tried to do that through friendships, and sometimes not healthy friendships. But it's even more, it's easier to do, I guess, in the internet age. And I find myself doing this as well. You know, you start paying attention to statistics if you're a blogger, like, you know, how many people are commenting on your blog posts or how many Twitter followers you have, and all these kinds of things, as if we have more, we can feel better about ourselves. And I think the only antidote to that is to do these five disciplines that I've been talking about, and make sure that you're getting some healthy feedback and you're connected with a real community of people who love you just the way you are, not for your social media presence, not for what you can do for them, but who you are. So great question. Again, I think the five disciplines are the remedy to that. The next question comes from Andrew.
Hey there, Michael. This is Andrew Mason from Delaware with ProGuide.io. My question is, where's the line? I found myself checking Facebook, Twitter, email, WordPress comments, only to repeat after the end of that cycle. So you look up from your iPad and, oh, shoot, I've just lost 15 minutes. I know it's good to keep engaged and everything, but where's the line? It's getting kind of blurry for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is why we need these times every year when we can kind of retreat and reassess and re-engage in a more intentional, more meaningful way, because it happens to me too. The line gets blurred and we kind of get sucked into this vortex that it's the internet that is all consuming and demand. It would demand 24/7 if we would let it. But what I try to do is to block off certain times, like in the morning now. I don't look at the internet. I don't look at email. I don't look at social media until I've been through my morning routine, which for me, again, involves Bible reading. It involves just sitting quietly. It involves prayer. It involves journaling. And then I do some exercise and I try to get that all in so that I'm ready to sit down at my desk and go to work by about 8:30 in the morning. And again, that's just me. Your lifestyle may be different, but that's kind of a social media free zone. I'm not going to be involved in the internet until I've got that basic work done, which I think is my most important work, which is my own personal development, my own character transformation, my own spiritual development. So I think that's, if that starts going, if you have that kind of time in your life and that starts getting encroached upon by the internet and by your social media usage, it's time to push the pause button and to dial it back. And again, to get a sense of your own equilibrium and to reassess how you're going to engage in social media. I think it also helps to have a spouse or a good friend who can hold you accountable to this. And this is great for Gail and for me, because we do spend a lot of time together and we like to spend the evenings together talking over dinner and engaging with one another. And I think that's one way to combat this as well, is to make sure you've got these healthy relationships going on. The next question comes from Casey.
Hi, Michael. This is Casey calling from Seattle, and I blog at www.somewiseguy.com. And regarding social media, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on helping our kids navigate that as they grow up. Because when I was a kid, I was playing outside and watching Scooby-Doo and playing with G.I. Joes. Interested in your feedback.
Yeah, another great question, Casey. And I agree. We have a responsibility to this next generation. And I think the most important way that we can influence our kids and our grandkids is by modeling the behavior that we want them to emulate. This is so crucial. And I think sometimes we don't fully realize what's at stake, but more is going to be caught than what is taught. So they're going to look at us and they're going to see how we respond to the internet. And if we're always distracted, if we're always caught up with our focus somewhere else than where our bodies are, then that's going to communicate to them that that's okay. And in fact, one of the things in the Newsweek article that was really disturbing was this phenomenon of parents being present in body, but not really present in spirit. And they gave the example of a woman who's breastfeeding, but texting at the same time. So the baby thinks there's this close physical proximity and intimacy, but mom's not really there. You know, the lights are on, but nobody's at home. We've got to guard against that. And I think first and foremost, we've got to be examples. And then I think we've got to find ways to engage with our kids and our grandkids that aren't around the internet. And I, you know, again, I'm not opposed to the internet. I think that a healthy use of that is fine. But I think we've got to find ways to engage with them, whether it's like I also did with Finn when he was over, outside throwing a football or building model airplanes or, you know, just doing something, going for walks and talking. Those kinds of things are focal practices that will keep us or inoculate us from getting the bad effects of the internet. So I think it's our responsibility as adults to do that and to be proactive and to be positive. The last question comes from Paul.
Hi, Michael. This is Paul McGuire from Birmingham, Alabama, and I blog at affluentstudent.com. I suspect that an audience today expects that a question or comment left on a website becomes more like a conversation requiring near real-time interaction. My question is, how can we apply the principles and platform to grow our audience reach by meeting this expectation and yet maintain a healthy level of social media usage? Thanks.
Again, I think we have to model here, and I've tried to do this on my blog. You know, I'm not instantly available on my blog to respond to comments. Now, I get there in a reasonable amount of time, usually a couple times a day, maybe three or four times a day on a busy day, but I'm not sitting there 24/7 commenting on Twitter and commenting on my blog. I think the modeling that we do to the people who are our, quote, followers or the people who look up to us is really important. And if we're completely dominated by the internet and by social media, that's not something I want to communicate or something I want to be part of. So again, modeling is critically important. And I think for most people, they understand that. They don't expect instantaneous response. They do expect some response and some engagement. And I think for all of us, we have to find that line. I don't want to give so much away to strangers that I have nothing left for my family or for myself. So to me, that's kind of the line that I'm looking to. Am I attending to those things that matter the most to me? Well, that's about it for the questions. I want to ask you, what suggestions do you have for better managing your time on the internet? I'm struggling with this just like you are, and my guess is that you've got some good solutions, and I'd love to hear from you. So to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/019, as in episode 19, michaelhyatt.com/019. I've got a few announcements. Again, if you want to take your speaking to the next level, visit SCORE, again with two R's, scoreconference.com. If you register before the end of the day on July the 31st, you can take $200 off your registration price by entering the discount code Hyatt. Also, I signed an exclusive speaking representation agreement with Premier Speakers Bureau in Nashville, and I'm only accepting about 50 speaking engagements a year, but I do have a few open dates left this fall. So if you'd be interested in discussing the possibility of having me speak to your company, to a conference or a special event, please visit michaelhyatt.com/speaking. And finally, if you're ready to get serious about building your platform and taking your blogging to the next level, you can't do better than launching a self-hosted WordPress blog. That's what nearly all professional bloggers use. That's what I use at michaelhyatt.com. And if you're a little technically challenged and that makes you fearful, I've got some great news. I've just produced a free screencast called How to Set Up a Self-Hosted WordPress Blog in 20 Minutes or Less. There's a link in the show notes to it, but this short video will take you through the process step by step. Trust me, anyone can do this. In the last 10 days, I've had over 100 people use this video to launch their blog and begin building their platform. So you can find that screencast at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. Again, it's a screencast and it will take you step by step through the process. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please again go to michaelhyatt.com. Go to the show notes for this episode. Scroll down to the comments section. I would love to hear from you, a comment, a question, or whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.
This is your life. Are you who you want to be?
This is your life. Are you?